Hey there, thanks for joining episode 33 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. This show, we're going to be talking about Polish sausage and the latest innovations over at Al's Beef. All right, no, okay, I'm done with the Chicago accent. I just wanted to say 33. This is episode 33 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. And boy, is it a full one. We have the jock, we have the nerd, and we have my friend Scott. No, this is not British Scott who hates DC. This is American Scott who loves comic books and has a wicked cool job, listener. You definitely don't want to miss this. Let's do it!
It's the Jockey Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Welcome to episode 33, listener, and I'm sorry for screaming at you, but I'm very excited. My name is Imran.
And my name is Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he is the nerd.
And this is the show where we exclusively talk to people named Scott. Well, not really, but it seems like that. You might be confused. If you're a new listener, go check out the last show.
Episode 32.
Episode 32. We talked to British dating Scott. Today on the show, we have an woman. What the fuck? Who played that?
That was me.
Oh, shit.
You forgot to mention me, dude. You forgot to mention me.
You weren't supposed to be on this show.
Oh, shit.
Well, fuck you. I'm on here.
All right, fucking.
How the fuck does this guy keep going?
I just want to say, before you guys start the show, that I was like, amazed at your last show.
What?
You had, like, a huge celebrity on your last show.
We did. Yeah, we did.
You had C-3PO on.
C-3PO?
Yeah, dude. That was C-3PO, right?
Honestly, we thought we were talking to Michael Caine the whole time.
That dude was C-3PO, and then I was waiting for R2-D2 to chime him in the whole time, and he didn't.
Listen, Anthony Daniels said he wanted to come on, but he didn't want to use his real name, so we made up a whole thing for him. It was all
very clever, Imran.
That was not Scott Meridew from A Place to Hang Your Cape. That was actually C-3. No, that was fucking Scott. And speaking of Scott, I didn't even get to introduce my friend Scott Weinstein. Scott, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome.
I'm so excited because I literally, listeners, another old buddy of mine I haven't talked to in about 8 years. Why? Because I'm a shitty friend.
This is true.
Oh, shit.
Absolutely true.
You went and moved to Chicago.
I did. Scott is still in the great New York City.
Tri-state area. I'm in Jersey now.
Oh, you're in Jersey.
Jersey.
Wow.
Yeah.
America's armpit.
Yeah.
Well, it's more like the upper thigh.
Oh, that's not as smelly, but just as good.
It's a taint. It's a sweaty taint.
I like it.
It's
like
tainty.
I love a good upper thigh, though. Come on.
That, you don't know what you're going to get in an upper thigh. You can have sweaty balls. You can have a clean vagina. You can have an 80s vagina, which is probably not good. It's probably worse than sweaty balls.
Yeah, you don't know what
it's
you're
just
getting.
Hairy.
It's true. It's just like the hint of something, and then all the mystery is there. It's the beginning.
It's musky.
It's the beginning of the journey, people. I'm diving in. I don't know what I'm talking about at this point. Scott.
Who is this guy, Scott?
Scott and I went to art school together.
Okay.
Scott was a film major. You were a film major, right? Yeah.
Yeah, film, yeah.
And I was like an illustration major, yet we all hung out. I think we like met on the first day of school.
Where do we know? I think.
Very early on.
I can't
on.
Remember now. I can't remember if I met Jose first or I met you first. We were just around. I don't know.
Well, you might have met Jose first. That he like, because I mean, I met Jose on the first.
Were you what dormitory were you in?
I was in Pantus the whole time. Pantus the first 3 years, and then the last year I was in ELJ, the older one.
Oh, right, yeah.
Okay,
what school is this,
this
for
is
the
Pratt.
Listener?
Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York, and I was in a dorm called Cannoneer. It was the shitty, like, cardboard dorm they threw up in the back for I don't know why, just in case.
Yeah. I liked it. It was like a basement.
It was a wonderful co-ed. One hallway was all girls. One hallway was all guys. And sometimes you would catch a girl in her towel in the guys' hallway. It was great.
Geek boner.
you catch a lot of things in that place. Gonorrhea.
What the hell is Rug Boy doing over there?
Listen, I just go anywhere where there's people.
I thought Rug Boy was the lunch lady's assistant in the cafeteria. Isn't that where we find you, Rug Boy?
There's a big campus. There's lots of places to sleep.
Yeah, they throw
Nobody cares. No one checks your ID in that place.
No,
you just Yeah.
And not in the 90s when we were there. It was in Brooklyn. Yeah. It was just shady.
The West kind of draw a little bit.
Dude, the West Indian security guards, they'd be like, nah, man, that's okay. You go ahead, man. That's no problem. Like, they didn't give a fuck.
Because we'd always catch them. They'd take the Pratt security van and drive down DeKalb to go buy pot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, there's
back the security guards were stoned.
Dude, I saw teachers. Awful. The teachers would go to the listener, back in the early 90s, before Giuliani, when New York was dirty and dangerous and glorious, you could literally walk into every other street and buy a little dime bag. It was magnificent.
Yeah. You could, buy them at church.
Yeah. You knew it was a place to get good stuff, because in the window, they had one line of products just covering the window. One line. You're like, how come they only have one line of Kit Kat bars? That's odd.
All the boxes
were empty.
Yeah, yeah. There was nothing else in it. It was so good. And stupid Giuliani had to go clean that up.
My first year at Pratt, I went to I wanted to join a video store, so I went down to DeKalb, and there was this rundown video store. It was like the only before they even opened that Blockbuster on Myrtle, and I went in there and I got I forget what I checked out, but. I remember you had to sign up for order membership, and the guy, it didn't occur to me until 3 years later, but the guy was looking at me what are you doing? And I had to fill out a membership form. He didn't know where it was. I'm like, oh, it didn't occur to me later. It's a front. Of course they don't rent.
Yeah. They're you're really renting a video? We have three videos.
What is this white boy doing?
And we have Porky's, RoboCop 3, and La Bamba, and that's it.
Those are hits at the time. Listener, I teased at the top of the show that Scott has a really awesome job. Scott is co-producer for Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update segment.
Shit.
That deserves absolutely.
Did I beat you on that one?
Scott, you did.
Oh, shit.
Scott, how long have you been working there now?
I, in January coming up, will be 20 years.
Wow. Holy shit. It's been 20 years.
I haven't done anything.
Sorry, I didn't mean to hit the crickets. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. You've seen a lot of shit. Now, we both went to Pratt, and we both interned at Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Yes.
And Scott goes on to SNL, and I end up with this shitty show. Somewhere, listener, I fucked up. I don't know. I missed a train, or I took a.
There was a fork in the road, and you obviously chose the wrong
off
path
ramp. I think I missed my turn.
You should have stayed in New York. That's the answer.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was. Yeah, there was. Well, there was
Chirac.
There was a lot of issues. Where I had to come back, but I loved working interning at Conan. It was so much fun. This was 1996 for me.
Yeah, that was early Conan.
Yeah, yeah.
Besides Oprah, is there any shows, TV shows in Chicago?
Oprah's not even in Chicago.
No, Springer left. Oprah left.
Steve
Oprah
Harvey.
Shut down.
Yeah, so your
Steve
TV.
Steve Harvey. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, you do.
I thought it was
what did you guys do at interning at Conan?
Scott, who did you intern for? Because I interned for some weird fucking thing.
I was with the research department. They did I work with the segment producers, and I basically – I mean, this is pre-internet, so this is way pre-internet. They had a library at NBC that you would have to go up and photocopy stuff. So I would go in – if whatever host was on or whatever guest was on, I'd go up to the library and photocopy all the most recent articles about whoever was going to be on the show that week. And then the research – the segment producers would go through and come up with questions and figure out what to talk to the guest about.
That show was amazing. It was my first taste of a well-oiled machine, man. It was every day, everyone was doing their thing, and every evening it would all come together, and this just machine would just go, and the show would get done. And 5 days a week, dude, it was insane. It was unbelievable.
I've got friends now who are on Seth's show now, on the new one.
Oh, yeah, the new Late Night.
And it's a grind. Those guys really, really have to – put in those hours.
The pressure's crazy.
Yeah, and it just sort of never stops. And
how many hours a week do you estimate they're putting in, or are even you?
Well, my schedule's different, but there's okay. I mean they got it down to a system, but they're definitely 10 to at least 7 a day, which
Wow.
I mean, it doesn't sound like crazy, but it's when you're putting on an actual show every day, it wears you out.
And they're long days because the show doesn't tape till like 6:30 in the evening or whatever. So, yeah. And then you got to do all that shit afterwards and you're there early in the morning. I interned for the set designers.
Oh, yeah.
Only because that was the only fucking internship that was available. I was like, whatever. I'll take it. I don't care. But it was so cool because I got to make the – remember the claymation bits back?
Yeah.
I made clay figures of them for two claymation bits. One of them I went and bought really expensive dollhouse furniture, like literally little fucking pieces that were like hundreds of dollars. And then they just fucking trashed it with like fake blood for the thing. I was like, oh, my God. That was like $2,000 worth of dollhouse furniture and my shitty claymation figures. And then they just – it was so – oh, my God. It was so much fun.
That's funny. Yeah, those are, I remember those.
I remember seeing those.
Yeah, it's still – I'll listener, I'll find one of them and put
was
the link.
Tom Snyder?
Yes, I did. Tom Snyder, the chef Paul Prudhomme. And there was one with Boris Yeltsin and who's the guy? Charles Bronson.
Charlie Bronson, the Majestic.
Go to Mr. Majestic. I'll find, I think one of them's on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes. Listener, also, the stuff we talk about in the show, you will be able to find and follow along and play along in the show notes right in your podcast app, or just visit jockandnerd.com/33. That's 33 for anybody not in Chicago. but so how did you get from that to Saturday Night Live?
The internship at Late Night, I think, was only a semester. And when it was done, I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. I like working at NBC. And so the only other thing at the time was Saturday Night Live. And so I found out who to send a resume to. And I went and applied and got an internship. And like, it was basically in the same kind of general research department.
Yeah.
And it was just before I'd started, there was this art, because I started right after Farley and Sandler and those guys left.
Right.
It was Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shannon.
They were all new.
All new. Yeah. My first day when I walked in, I recognized Will. I recognized one other person, and I couldn't tell who all the cast members were. Like, I saw a bunch of people standing around.
Oh, that's weird.
And I was like, which, like,
who?
Some are writers, some are just like people, some are cast members. Like, I couldn't, so I was like scared.
But that must have been cool because, like, you don't have that intimidation. Like, you're not like walking into a room of legends, you're walking into like people that are just breaking in.
Yeah, that was it. Like, the only hangout holdovers were Norm MacDonald and David Spade.
Yeah. But now you're going through this together with them now, you know?
It's different now, yeah.
That's awesome. I just want to know, like, what is your day like in season? Like, take us through a day.
My day is a little different than the rest of the show. So I work just specifically with Weekend Update. So, like, Monday through Friday is just writing jokes. We have four writers now: Pete Schultz, Josh Patton, Katie Rich, and Megan Callahan.
Wow.
And they're all really, really funny, very talented people. And so what I do is I come in the morning. I'm because I'm married and have a kid and I get up super early. I'm in the office before anyone. So I'll start writing setup. So basically they're the first line of every joke. So I'll go through the newspapers, go through online, find like usually about 30 setups is my average every day.
Every day.
Every day. And then I give them out to the writers. By the time I'm done, the writers are usually filtering in because they'll start like at noon and like work through 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And then those guys write jokes every day. They'll usually write probably 40 jokes a day, 30, 40 jokes a day. And then
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
At the end of each day, they turn in their jokes to myself. And then we have two producers now. One head producer, Dennis McNicholas, and then Pete Schultz is head writer for Update. And we all read through all the jokes. And so we kind of weed out the ones that we like and the ones that work. And they do that Monday through Thursday. They do that. Friday, we start out doing that. And then Friday night, we sit down with the anchors, Colin Jost and Mike Che now.
Yeah.
And we sit down with them and out of the ones we've culled down, they read through, you know, probably 200-300 jokes.
Wow.
And just plow through, and they pick the ones they like best. And
they don't contribute at all. Anything?
They do. They do. It's Colin's the head writer for the show, so he's sort of writing sketches throughout the week.
Oh shit!
And then Che is. He's a writer too, so he'll write. He usually writes one or two sketches himself. So those guys are at the beginning of the week are doing sketch comedy stuff.
But the update jokes, they don't really come to the table with jokes, or they do?
They will sometimes. It totally depends. Like usually, what happens is there's some kind of jumping off point. Like there'll be a story that they heard throughout the week that they want to do jokes about, or like something that's on their mind. They want to usually what they write are any of the longer bits.
Yeah, you can tell the personal setups. You're like, that's probably his joke.
Yeah, because those things, though, they usually they'll originate them. They'll kind of write a roughed out version, and then on Saturday morning we all sit down and kind of hammer out like a more polished version and kind of get to the juice of it. And
so scientific.
I know. Like, how do you? I was going to ask. What makes a good joke? How do you decide?
Yeah. How do they decide?
If it makes you laugh, like that at that. At that stage, it's just if you laugh at it, it stays alive and keeps moving through the process.
Like if everybody laughs at it, what if just like half of the people are laughing? Doesn't matter.
It's totally subjective. Like usually if everyone laughs at it, you know you got something good and you kind of hold on to it. But sometimes there'll be a joke that one of the guys, like, you know, one or two people may have laughed at, and they're like, we want to hold on to that and try it. And,
do they want you to push the edge on jokes, like be a little more edgy, or like how do they restrain you, or how does that work?
No, they don't restrain us. Well, the audience restrains us is what happens. We have
because you have a dry run with this set.
Yeah, we have dress rehearsal Saturday at 8 o'clock, and the audience will tell you very clearly if they like the joke or not. And what it took me a couple of years to kind of figure out what was going on, because you get. When you work on an update, that's all anyone thinks about all week long. And so you're sort of thinking this is the whole show.
Right.
When in reality, there's an hour and a half of other stuff happening around you. Right. So the audience there is, they could be there to see the host. They could be there to see the musical guest. They could just be like a thousand reasons. They're there to see their favorite cast member. They're not necessarily there to see weekend update. So we can't do what the Daily Show does, where we're like super specific and political and, because our audience is all over the place. Yeah, so you sort of got to ride a fine line of saying something that means something to you and then also like appealing to a general audience.
So when you do the dry run, and then that same audience watches the live show?
I don't know if I'm cutting you guys off. Tell me if I'm cutting off.
No, go ahead.
We bring in a new audience. So dress rehearsal lasts 2 hours, and it's usually three or four extra sketches that will get cut before air.
Wow.
And then, it goes from 8 to 10 on Saturdays. And then they have about an hour and a half to sort of figure out what they're going to do make the show.
Jesus Christ.
And then 11:30 rolls around and we're on TV.
How hectic is that hour? But that hour and a half when you do the dry run and you're like, fuck, okay, we got to figure out if this is going to work or not. How hectic is that hour and a half?
It depends how the week is going. Sometimes, I mean, the hour and a half, I say that in a very generalization. What happens is after a sketch is at dress rehearsal, the writers of those sketches sit under the bleachers with the dress rehearsal audience, with Lorne Michaels, the producer. And as the sketch is going on, Lorne will give them notes and tell them, you know, you've got to change this line. This isn't working. And if the sketch is savable, as soon as it's done, the writers go and like start rewriting it. If it's not savable, you know right away. And people just sort of go fuck it, it's done.
Right.
But so they're, you know, depending on where the sketch aired in the show, they may have 2 hours, 2.5 hours to polish it up.
How many of your weekend update jokes get changed in that time?
Oh, a ton. We start so those guys read like 300 jokes, give or take. By the time we're done with joke read, we usually have about 100 and jokes and change that we're going to like consider for Saturday.
Wow.
And then Friday night, myself and Dennis and Pete sit down and we whittle down those 100 jokes to about 30 we're going to try on Saturday. This is a long explanation of the process, but Saturday morning when we have kind of everyone's had a few hours of sleep, we come back and we look at those 30 jokes and sort of whittle them down to about 25, give or take, just the ones that we really want to try and make sure they work. So we'll rewrite them a little in the morning. But throughout the course of the day, we're sort of polishing those jokes. So like Mike Che is very good about this. He just carries his pack around with him all day and will just read the jokes again and again and again and just tweaks minor work. Like it seems like minor changes, but he's been a stand up for years. Yeah. And so he knows like the cleanest, you want it to be as clean as possible. Like, I'm sorry, clean in the sense of like
strip it down.
Right. It's got to sound smooth when it gets out of his mouth. And wow. So
yeah,
that's
the way you word stuff. It really does, like, you know, it's a crafting of a joke, you know,
it's so effortless. It sounds really natural.
Oh yeah. And that's the end goal. You want to make people think you made it up on the spot, The fact is it took all week to get to that point. But yeah, so there's a lot of tweaking. Usually, at least with update after dress rehearsal, it's more a question at that point of cutting jokes than it is like trying to save jokes. Yeah. Like if a joke didn't work, we're not going to try. There's no rewriting that can fix it.
Get rid of it.
Yeah. And then we also have features anytime another cast member besides those guys are on. So we have usually 2 to 3 features a show, an update, depending on what it is. So we have to also rewrite those, and that's when it gets time consuming because we really only have like 2 hours to like polish it up and figure out how to save it.
Are you guys writing the characters too that show up, or is that another, like they're sent in?
It's usually the sketch writers usually write the features, but sometimes we'll write stuff too. Like Jebediah Atkinson, we kind of write in house.
Oh, he's great. I love Drunk Uncle, dude. I fucking love Bobby Moynihan, Drunk Uncle. Say what, I know people don't like him. That shit is hilarious.
He's so good. Bobby's hilarious, and Drunk Uncle is our favorite.
I fucking love Drunk Uncle. I want to hang out with him.
The best is writing.
You almost do.
We got our own Drunk Uncle here. Wait, you're saying the best is writing what?
Well, it's just writing things like Drunk Uncle and Jebediah, where like it's the stuff we can't say on television that that makes us laugh the hardest. And then we're like, oh yeah, you can't make like the racial stuff always is great to do. And then
there's great characters to filter it through to get it out there. You have a favorite anchor, since you worked there that really was like, who was just like easy to write for, or you could give them anything and they would make it work.
Seth was there the longest. And I think that was probably the most fun I had. Like, it was weird because I was in a different place in my life with each of them. Like, I think they had the 40th anniversary special this year.
That was amazing.
And it was weird. It was a weird, like a professional high school reunion for me. Like, you just saw people I hadn't seen in, 20 years. But I got to thinking about it a lot, and I was like, I was 24 when I started working there.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I was single and living in Brooklyn with Jose. Then like, now I live in Jersey with, I have a house and a kid and a wife, and like my life is entirely different.
Did live at 235 Washington?
Yeah, after you left.
Oh shit, nice.
Is that reunion, the SNL reunion, the 40-year reunion, similar? How similar is it to the reunion you just had with Imran on the webcam right now?
It's almost exactly the same.
Same kind of emotions bubbling through?
Yeah, it was like we dressed the same. It was great.
Were you guys close? And I don't remember. You guys really close, or you guys were like peripheral?
Dude, we hung out at 235 all the time.
Oh yeah, dude, 235.
Oh yeah, you used to live there, and then he used to live there.
A lot of people lived there, like at different times. It was kind of like a boarding house.
I slept there a lot.
Yeah, there was people would leave their 40s in our fridge and come back and drink it later. You know who I'm talking about. But man, that was some good times. But dude, I've been in a lot of Scott's movies. We would nerd out over comics, and he gave me my first starring role.
Oh, yes.
I remember this.
The great,
Scott made this, like, the people at Pratt, they were talented, and they had to, like, make movies. Like, if you were a film major, you made a movie for your senior project or whatever. But I think this wasn't even the senior project. This is just one of the things he did, and you were the main guy. It was like a vampire thing, right?
A little film called Bite Me, A Vampire Love Story. Anthony, I was a vampire slayer who got the girl at the end. It was like the most unrealistic portrayal.
Yeah, that's like a bad Adam Sandler movie.
I was a badass. The best was senior year when you guys had like the film, the final film critique for the school. And I was in like 6 of the fucking movies.
Oh yeah, I was in Jesse's.
Yeah, I was in all of them.
Oh yeah,
Imran was really in Jesse's.
Oh my God, do I have to even?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
All of Imran was in Jesse's.
Okay, I'm gonna have
listener. Jesse is the name of Imran's wife.
No. Yeah, she is. But they're okay. Look, I'll have to now. They busted me. Anthony, you're going to love this story.
Okay, let's go.
This is good for everyone.
One of the films was made by our friend Jesse Knight, and it was Owen's Last Day at School. It was took place at the last day of school during high school, and I had a very important role. It was kind of like a teen buddy comedy. Basically, I was in two scenes. Here was the scene. I was walking by a set of phone booths in the school. People are in the phone booths, and the bell rings, and I get excited, and I go, "Oh yeah, school's over, summertime vacation!" And I start taking off all of my clothes,
and he went all the way down. He started taking his skin off, like he was just like skin, he's just muscle, and
Okay, so there's a movie out there. With me completely naked, I took all my clothes off except for my socks. And I was like, woo, summertime. And then at the end, a character walks up to me and goes, dude, it's only lunch. And I look down and my clothes are gone. And then later on in the movie, there is a fight breaks out in the hallway. At which point, I slide into a classroom butt-ass naked in my socks and yell out, fight! And so that was my big – and then, like, the whole school saw this movie. It was very interesting.
I watched it a lot.
I got to find a copy of that and burn it. No, I don't know. I don't think
put it in the show notes.
I don't think – it's not on the internet. I don't think we can put it on YouTube. Oh, my God. I can't believe –
my favorite part was when I was watching them shoot the thing, the scene.
You were there?
Yeah, I was there.
You were hiding in the trash can back there. That was you, wasn't it?
Wherever you guys were, I was not far behind.
I
stalked all of you.
I can't believe you guys got me to tell that fucking story.
I set it up. You could have just skimmed right over it.
I could have, but now it's a good story. Anyways, Bite Me, a Vampire Love Story was a lot of fun, and I got to be the hero, and that was great. So.
And yeah, he could actually act pretty good, Imran.
Yeah, Imran was great. That was
go on.
No, he was great. Like, that
go on.
Oh, keep going.
Imran was in like a lot of things. A lot of acting.
You hear that, Hollywood producers? You can contact me at show@jockeynerd.com.
Boom.
I'm available for voiceover work and mocap and any kind of feature.
And he goes nude, dude.
Yeah, I'll take it all off. You don't got to worry about it. Yeah, yeah. Easy money shot right there. I'm totally
segue that, motherfucker.
Should we get back to Scott and not talk about you being naked?
Scotty, is that movie online? Can you put it on YouTube?
The what? Mine or
Bite Me, a Vampire Love Story?
I probably can't because it's on a 3/4-inch video.
Oh,
and
shit.
I have no idea where to play it.
I think I have it on VHS somewhere, but still, I don't know what to do with the fucking VHS.
All you gotta do is put it into your Apple, into iMovie.
Just shove it into the Apple?
You need like an RCA cable converter.
Yeah, but you need a VCR too.
I need a VCR. You still have a VCR?
Yeah, my mom's house.
Oh boy, it's above the 8-track. I know it's above the 8-track machine.
Yeah, she's all that shit's been there since like the 1970s. Nothing's even been touched.
Scotty, I remember this one dude, a sound engineer that used to work on all the shows that I would talk to, who was really cool. I'm wondering if he's still there. I kind of feel like he is. Do you remember Speedy?
Absolutely. Speedy is still there.
Oh, what? Oh, my God. This dude was like metal. Does he still have long hair? Does he look the same?
Looks exactly the same. He's like a little grayer, but exactly the same. Yes.
Speedy had some fucking stories. Let me tell you, the sound people there, everyone there worked there. It was so nice. Like, they're just so much fun.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a really nice guy. Really awesome.
I mean, do you see yourself working there like forever? Like, it's family. Like, why would you leave? I wouldn't want to leave.
I mean, at this point, I don't think I have a choice, but yeah.
Well, you know what I think? Like, the hours suck balls.
Yeah.
Like, every Saturday night, like, you know, you got to work.
Yeah,
and
that's
Friday night, too.
Yeah,
like, doesn't it take
your hours on a weekend?
Well, weekday, the beginning of the week for me is pretty good. I'm usually home by 7, which isn't bad. Friday night, I actually stay in the city now. They get us a hotel rooms if you don't live in Manhattan, you can get a hotel room. So I stay there. Yeah, it's a nice thing. So I don't have to come back to Jersey. So I'll stay there Friday night. And then It's like Friday to like usually 1-ish, 2 in the morning, and then I'm back again by like 9 or 10 in the morning, and then obviously not there till the show airs or is done. It's at 1. So yeah, and then I get home 2-3 in the morning on Saturday. I don't go to the parties anymore. I used to, but I can't.
Yeah, I mean, tell us about the parties.
Dude, the parties, oh, from what I hear, are the shit. You got any stories?
I want to hear about these parties. You got the jocks' attention.
You got any stories you can share, Scott?
They were, again, it was when I was single, they were more fun. Yeah, but yeah. But they're weird because they're usually at a restaurant. So, like, it starts out. Oh, hold on for a second.
Uh-oh.
Was that your cat?
I think the cat just...
Was that your little pussy messing with you, Scotty?
That's how it happens.
Oh, boy.
That's how it happens. Blame it on the pussy.
You gotta blame it on the pussy.
I was petting my pussy. It got out of control. And
stop stroking your pussy.
And now, yeah.
Hey,
now,
pussy cat. what happened there?
she pulled out the cord.
He's just pressed a button.
Oh, hey, how do you do that?
Oh, wow.
Scott, you just put a – who did that? Did you do that to him?
I didn't do it.
Rugboy, did you do that to him?
No.
Somebody so
for the listener on Google Hangouts right now, Scott Weinstein's face now has a dog with an eye patch.
How do you turn it off?
And a college hat.
Scott must have done it to himself.
Scott looks like an educated dog.
Scott, please tell us about these parties.
They're at restaurants, like different restaurants around town, and it's just you're going into basically at a restaurant, so it can't be like a real party. You're at a restaurant.
Right.
And I can jump in here if you want.
Oh, Rugboy, you've been to these parties?
Okay, listen, I asked him to do me a couple of favors.
Oh, he
snuck
you in.
Let me go. But like he like gave me like this whole like list of things I had to like. I had to shower.
Oh boy,
I had to wear nice clothes. Like I had to brush my teeth.
Yeah, fucking him out.
So, he didn't do any of that stuff, by the way.
No, I didn't. But still, whatever. So I get to Saturday Night Live. And as for some reason, somebody told me to sit somewhere and I wanted better seats and I started arguing with the guy and I got thrown out. So I had to like call Scott and he had to get me back into the building. And there's a guy named Rugboy who wants to come into Saturday Night Live.
Rugboy, who'd you see there? Who'd you see? Name some drops. I mean, drop
some names. A lot of people. I was like back in the day, I saw like Lindsay Lohan was like right in front of me.
Nice.
I could have grabbed the booth.
Yeah.
That's how close. But let me just. So after the Saturday Night Live and I got kicked out and everything, Scott was like, let's go to the party. So basically, this is the rundown how it works. You get there. Sometimes there's paparazzi waiting outside the front of the building
because
they're trying to catch the famous people. Yeah. Like if it's Demi Moore or Ashton Kutcher or whoever. They want to get like a photo. So then you walk in and basically the club is like they always do it set it up the same way. It's always like regular people that either work with the crew are in the front and then like the famous people are like in the back, like closed off behind ropes. Okay. Right? Is that about right, Scott?
Yeah, pretty much.
You can literally, if you like, you know, Scott, like Scott goes right into the back. No problem. Nobody asks him, especially nowadays, you know, he's the big man on campus.
Yeah.
So he gets in there. So if you want to like be like right next to a celebrity, you know, he can do that. But like he's like done with that shit now.
Yeah. I mean, after a while. Yeah.
The first couple of times you go, it's probably great. But then you're kind of like, hey, who cares?
It's so, like the first time you see Times Square. I remember I was like 17. I was like, whoa, Times Square. Literally a week later, I'm like, eh, whatever. It's nice.
Yeah.
Like it wears off, you know. They're just fucking people, really.
But it's cool. Yeah. Like you could just be like 3 feet from Michael Keaton.
That's awesome.
You could be like just standing there, and like all the people from the cast are just right there, just talking and having drinks and stuff.
Wow, how much that 40 year party? How much did that whole thing mean to you, though? Really, to see everybody like
that was interesting. It was fun. It was a weird experience. The show itself was fine. I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah.
The party after was crazy.
Yeah.
That was, they had it at the plaza and they set up like, it was in this, I haven't even been into the plaza before. And then we get to go all the way, like this huge ballroom in the back. And everyone's in black tie. It's like you're walking along and like bumping into Jay-Z and Beyonce. And like they didn't like normal parties, like Reg Boy was saying, have it's roped off.
Yeah.
Everybody there was VIP. So like
everybody and everybody was there.
It was crazy. And then at some point, they had put up a bunch of music instruments on the stage in the ballroom. And it's like Paul McCartney goes up and jams and does a song. And then like, I think Taylor Swift was there and she played, and then Miley Cyrus did something weird. And, I can't remember now,
and then Prince, like, have you seen Jimmy Fallon tell that story? Listener, I'll put that video in the note. You got to watch it. It's a 9-minute story. And the beauty is he is geeking out as hard as you would be. Like, Jimmy's so sincere. And he's like, I'm on stage and then motherfucking Prince shows up and the B-52s want to come on and everyone's playing. And I was like, this is the best story ever.
It was Jimmy was so good at that. Like he basically kind of jumped on stage after Paul McCartney played, and he was like, he looked out in the audience and he knows, I mean, he's friends with all these people now, right? And he's like, you come up here and just got all these people. And then I didn't even know Prince was there. And then that was, I forgot about that. That was insane.
Holy fuck.
Like, that sounds like a surreal dream I had one fucking night.
Well, that's the thing. It was such a weird experience. Like, it was fun, but it was also just beyond weird. And then after Prince played, I think a bunch of us were like, I don't think that tops anything can top that. We got to go.
Yeah, that's when you leave.
Can I jump in for a second?
Yeah.
Who knows if this question is going to go over well. But anyway, when the 40th anniversary happens and then you got all these people that you used to work with, does anybody come by and say hello to you and like to, you know, that you work with, like did Colin Quinn be like, hey, Scott, how you doing? You know, like,
Yeah. No, I saw Colin. I talked to him for a few minutes. Tina and Amy did a bit for updates. So I work with them again.
That was really fun.
Cause like we just sat down, all of us like hammered out something for update. And, it was just like old times. It was great. It was just, and those guys are really sweet and like so nice. And like, honestly, some of the funniest people I've ever met in my life, and it's great to be just see them.
Well, they didn't forget about you, basically. They remember.
Oh no, they're very good. Like all, like Will Ferrell, I gotta say, he's one of those guys who just doesn't forget people, yeah, and has every right to have forgotten tons of people at this point in his life. And he's always like,
that's awesome.
Remembers everyone he sees. So yeah, they're very good.
When you're at this party and you're rubbing elbows with celebrities, as I know you've been to a bunch of after parties, so obviously this is the 40th, so it's a bigger event, and there's a lot of celebrities. Are you like, wow? Do you look around and go, wow, like I'm here, or are you numb to it?
That one I was a lot of, wow, I can't believe I'm here, because it was, yeah, because I normally know who's going to be at shows at this point, and you sort of the regular show you get numb to, but this was extra, and it was. It was very unique.
Because, like, you're not doing a show at that moment. You're at a party, and you're in with everyone, and you're all kind of just, you know, enjoying the space. You're not, like, worried about if the sketch is going to go over, if this joke's going to go over. It's different, you know? And, cool.
It was neat because the normal show is – I don't stop moving from, like, 9 in the morning till after the show is done. So that's most of the reason I don't go to the parties anymore. I'm just physically exhausted by the end of the night. So, but this one, everything was sort of locked in by the time we were done or before it aired. So I didn't really have anything to do. So I could actually watch the show, and I got to when the party started, I was like, oh, I'm kind of not exhausted. This is a nice way to.
Can I just say, I know what I felt. The only thing that hurt that show, honestly, was the fucking audience. If they had a regular fucking audience, those jokes would have killed because the shit was funny. But all those celebrity motherfuckers are like, I'm not going to fucking laugh at this. They're going to put the camera on me. Like, I felt like they really didn't want to laugh. I was like, you should have had regular people in the audience.
Well, we all kind of thought that when they were preparing for the show, we knew that would be the situation because it's like the Emmys or the Academy Awards. Like those audiences are terrible.
Yeah.
Right.
They had so many people they invited to that thing. They had to build extras. Basically, the studio was all seats. Imran, you remember, and Rug Boy, when you snuck into the show, you remember. The stage is 8H is kind of a large studio, like one of the larger in at least in 30 Rock. But they had seats everywhere. So like they really only had one tiny small space for performance on stage, and everything else was seating. And then they had to use Seth's studio and then I think Jimmy's studio, I'm not sure, for overflow because they couldn't get everyone in a studio.
Wow.
And
wow.
Wait, so they streamed but they were watching it like on a screen in the other studio?
Yeah.
Well, see, they should have had the celebrities over there and you bring in the normals and then they'll laugh because I kind of felt bad. Like the material, I loved it. I was laughing my ass off and then I was like, you guys.
That's interesting too that you bring that up, Imran. Here's a jock moment. Whenever there's like the World Series or a big basketball game, the crowds are always quieter because all the rich people start sitting up front. Mm-hmm. And all the celebrities start sitting up front, so it's not as rabid a crowd. So when you get people that aren't the true fans of the show, and not to say the celebrities aren't your fans, but
have decorum.
Yeah, right. They're restrained, but
they're restrained.
They don't let loose.
Restrained audience.
Yeah, that's
Lindsay Lohan lets loose. I'll tell you.
Shit! What happened, man? But look. Scott, you guys are doing a great job. I mean, I don't have to say this, but I grew up with this show. It is a comedic icon. I've always loved it. I don't care who the cast is. I've loved every version of it, every generation of it, and it continues to break ground and just be awesome. Like, it's been on so long. It's unbelievable.
I got a question for Scott.
All right.
Yeah.
What any like good stories or any celeb stories, anything you would want to share with us?
Yeah, well, I'm going to try to think.
Maybe your favorite. Your favorite story.
Yeah, safe for you to share.
Long years ago, I think my favorite biggest celebrity story was when Colin was doing Update, Colin Quinn, I should say. He's like what they call a stand-up. Like if you ever saw him in a comedy club, all the big comics come to see him. Like and he's hilarious. He's really funny. He's just one of those guys who's just sort of never gotten to that next level, but
he doesn't even need it though. I like him where he is.
By the way, did you see Trainwreck?
No, not yet.
I saw Trainwreck and I saw his new comedy thing where he talks about like racial stuff.
Yeah.
And they were both pretty good.
Oh, good, good.
He was great in Trainwreck though.
He's really funny in Trainwreck. But, so Colin had, he's friends with Seinfeld and Chris Rock and those guys from like way back when. So after he left the show and after 9/11, they had, he had this like 3-episode thing on NBC. It sort of predated when he did Tough Crowd on Comedy Central.
Okay.
Nobody's going to remember it. I don't think anyone will watch it, but, Seinfeld kind of produced it. And so, because I'd worked with Colin, he asked me to help work on this NBC thing he was doing. So I was sort of floating between SNL and that show while I was in production. And so one day I go over to his offices, like they're on the other side of the building. And I walk over and it's like, hey, we're going to lunch. I'm like, oh, where are we going to lunch? Like, you and me and Jerry are going to lunch. Like,
oh, shit. Seinfeld?
So it was just like me and Colin and Seinfeld at lunch.
Holy shit.
What? We at Mendy's? You get the soup?
We had was it the early bird lunch special? Were you in a diner?
He took out a space pen, though.
Oh, wait. What? Oh, he did take out the space pen.
Yeah.
Upside down.
Yeah. That was one of the coolest things because Seinfeld was done at that point. So he was like, and he was super nice. And he was talking about like the things he regretted that he didn't get to do on Seinfeld.
Wow.
And he was saying how they had planned to do a claymation episode. Speaking of claymation.
Yeah.
He wanted to do a claymation episode once. And then he's like, oh, so mad. We should have done it. They started like writing it and I heard that show Tool Time was doing one. And Home Improvement did one. And he's like, so we canceled it because we didn't want to look like we were copying them. And he's like, I regret that because that would have been great. We should have done it.
You wanted to do a claymation episode.
Could have done the animation, Imran.
Dude, you only hear that here at jockandnerd.com, folks. Come on, where else are you going to get that story? That's have you seen Cop Show? His web series?
Dude, no, I heard it's good.
It's hilarious. And the show is the behind the scenes of him shooting a fake cop show.
Oh, wow.
So it's all like, and they're short episodes and everyone is in it. Jerry's in it. He gets all his friends in it. It's fucking hilarious.
Oh, I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good. I'll put a link in the show notes, jockandnerd.com/ 33. Check out Cop Show. So I want to let's talk comic books, Scotty. What do you think?
Yeah. That sounds good. Let's go.
Because
let's
we used to nerd about comic books all the time, and Scott is very good at picking up new things.
Not only is he good at reading comics, but like he used to make comics.
Oh,
did you know that?
Yeah.
You forgot to mention that.
Let's, well, we got to promote this. I'm sorry. Let's back up a little. This Scott is was a writer on a webcomic called After School Agent, and I will put a link to that in the show notes, folks. And also with our buddy Chris Ciccone, who we went to school with, drawing, and the book was great. Do you want to describe it a little bit, Scotty?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was about this 13-year-old kid named Gordon who had been sick, and the government tested some cure on him, and it not only makes him better, but it gives him makes him stronger and faster, and basically kind of like a mini Captain America a little bit. And but they force him to go on these missions, so it's a little like it was just a little. It was always intended to be like tongue in cheek, like their government sending a 13-year-old kid on these crazy missions, and
he's got to like sneak out of high school and come up with excuses. Like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was fun action comedy. Like great
it sounds
stuff.
Interesting. It's like a very good concept. I like it.
Yeah.
Like his parents are from another country, so the government tells him, "Hey, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we're going to deport your parents."
Yeah.
And you'll never see them again. And then he's a young kid. He doesn't know that they can't do that, so he just listens to them and does it. Does what they tell him.
And Chris drew great action scenes of him, like, on the car and kicking ass. This little kid kicking ass. Like, the art was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Chris was awesome. His art got better and better with each one. He really, like, got dedicated to it. And he never asked for a penny for anything and was happy to do it.
It was a labor of love.
A labor of love.
When did you do this? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and when did we do this? It's Jesus.
If I remember correctly, it's probably like the 2006.
Oh wow,
yeah.
And you guys were doing a page. You were like publishing posting a page at the time on the website. How many issues were actually completed?
I did two full issues and then a bunch of mini comics afterwards. What started out with like two complete issues. We did. I think it was 2006 or 7. It started. I'm friends with a guy, Todd Zaga, who's a comic writer. He used to write Spider-Man and like a bunch of other stuff and Talos. Yeah.
And Parappanauts.
And Parappanauts, of course. Parappanauts, I totally, yeah.
They got a new thing coming out.
Yeah, go check them out on Kickstarter. I think it's done. The funding's done. But if go look up Parappanauts on Kickstarter. I'll send you a link.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Have you ever read that, by the way?
I have not, but
it's like BRPD. Or it's like a bunch of like it's a Sasquatch and a Chupacabra and a bunch of like other like
legends, urban legends.
Yeah, and they team up to like to fight ghosts and stuff.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really they did a really good job with it, but he was really nice and helpful and like taught me about going to conventions and stuff. So we did a bunch of conventions. I dragged Rugboy along.
Yeah.
By the way, if you check Rugboy in luggage, he's free to fly.
That's a
great. If you got a big enough dog thing, like the dog carry on, I just ship me with the dogs.
Great traveling tips, a Jock and Nerd podcast.
It's a crate.
Traveling since 2015.
If you have a Rugboy, just check him in as a pet in a dog crate and you won't have to pay for him.
When you smell as bad as I do, they don't even look in the cage. They just this smells like shit. Put him in with the dogs.
Oh, shit. Can people still buy copies of this?
If they come to my house, that's pretty much it. I put it out on let me go back. I want to finish my story about Chris, how good he is. Todd was really cool. He at one of the conventions, when we finished the first issue, he's like, he'd worked a lot with Image Comics, so he knew all those guys over there. And he's like, I can introduce you to Eric Larson and like, you know, see if he likes it or not. Whoa. So we're out with some, I think it was New York Comic Con, and we went there and we'd finished it. And we're super proud of it. And we took it over and he flips through it and he's basically just trashes it. Like, completely tears it apart. And we both walk away. I was pissed because he didn't even read a word of it. He just like flipped through it. And I was also pissed because the artwork looked great. Yeah. I don't agree with his taste in art anyway.
My takeaway from that thing was that Eric Larson did not want to be fucking bothered. and he just was just he just brushed you guys off. He wasn't ever really looking at it. He said whatever
to get you guys away.
To get us away. And that's the thing. Like I think he's an asshole. I've met him many times.
I met him twice, and he was briefly at like comic book appearances, and he seemed decent. It's weird.
Well, if you're were you trying to talk to him about working?
No.
Well, there's the difference. If you're coming up to him as a fan and you're sucking his balls, he's going to be nice to you. But if you go up to him and go, "Hey, dude, I want to do some comics," he'll tell you to go fuck yourself, basically.
Yeah.
But so, to Chris's credit, afterwards, I was like, "All right, well, that's the end of that." And like the next day, Chris called me and he's like, "Okay, I want to do number two."
And he was like, "You want to know?" Like, he was just like, "Fuck this guy! I'm gonna fucking
that's
do
great.
This."
It lit a fire. Awesome. Yeah, lit a fire under his ass.
And the second one was better than the first one. I think the art wise, he really upped his game. And then, so we did. We published two comics, and then at some point, I was like, "This is costing me more. I'm not making any money on this." And I was like, spending all this money. And I was like, I started hearing about web comics. So I was like, "Well, let me just repurpose this." So I started doing it as a webcomic.
Oh, the webcomic was afterwards.
Yeah, and then that's when I did the mini stories. I did them for webcomics. And I got this artist Leanne Hanna to do one, and this guy Jeremy Dale, who actually passed away a couple of months ago. But then Chris did another one for the web, and it was great.
Yeah,
they were all good. Did you guys collect them into one thing?
I did. Here, wait, hold on for a second. I'll show you. Mm-hmm.
Move the pussy. Chris's art always reminded me of John Romita Jr. a lot.
I would say John Byrne, John Romita Jr., John and, Byrne. And a little Jim Lee thrown in there.
Yes. Byrne and Romita together. Oh, look, there's the trade paperback.
Yeah, we'll do a little.
Full color?
No. Oh,
that shit is pricey, man. I know. Like, we've talked to creators, and I've, I had a little stint with a small company in the early 2000s, and to do an independent comic book, really, you have to go all in. You got to max out your shit. You got to work.
You're not making any money on that.
No,
right?
And even after all that, you don't know if it's going to hit. The whole thing is a fucking gamble.
But it's sort of like podcasting.
Takes a lot more time. This is a lot easier.
A lot more time.
There's a lot more blood, sweat, and tears going into doing comics. Like, but the thing is, doing the comics, writing the comics, all that stuff, I think it made you a better writer, right? It made you, a better judge of comic books.
It made you
analyze the medium a little bit more. So I think it was an all positive thing. That's why I don't like to deter people from doing comics.
No, yeah.
You should always try.
I mean, writing is producing. All of it's going to take you to your end goal, and it's going to enhance and help you.
If you do comics because you think you're going to be a millionaire, then you're an asshole. Don't do it for that reason. Do it because you love comics.
Yeah. If you're doing a podcast because you think you're going to make money, go fuck off. Scotty, let me ask you this. At that moment, let's say the universe took a different turn. Let's say Eric Larson looked at the book, showed it to his superiors at Image. They were like, "You know what? We love this. We want to go with this full time." They wanted you to work full time. Would you have left the SNL gig to write the comic book full time?
Probably not, because I would be super poor. It's knowing now what it is. Like, there's like my friend Todd is a good example. He's been doing this for years. Like, their book Perhaponauts, it sold okay, but it's one of those books like they just never broke.
They've been doing that for like 10 years, right?
Yeah, and they just kind of broke even on it at times at best. And that's why they're doing a Kickstarter now, because they just couldn't to fund it. They can't pay out of their pocket. So it's not one of those things you can, unless you're putting out like 5 or 6 books a year. Yeah. I mean, 5 or 6 books a month, you're not going to make any money.
That's hard, man. And then with the Kickstarter, it's just helped a lot of independent creators. Guys, check out the links for After School Agent. It's a lot of fun. Let's get to some comic book recommendations. What have you been reading lately, Scotty? What's fun? What's good?
I've been reading one of my favorites. I just picked up A Southern Bastards.
I've been hearing a lot about this title.
And Jason Latour. It's basically about this small town in Alabama that's controlled sort of mafia-like by the football coach, or the high school football coach.
Whoa.
And it's sort of it's Friday Night Lights meets Criminal. And
that's a great description. That's crazy.
The first arc is really engrossing. The artwork is fantastic. And then at the end of the first story arc, I don't want to give anything away, but there's like one thing that happens at the end. You're like, oh, this is going to be a great series. Like, I see where this is going to go, and it's going to be fantastic. But it's been good. I definitely
and this is one like new.
Readers, it's called Southern Bastards.
Southern
right?
Bastards. Southern I'll put a link in the show notes, shockandnerd.com/33. This is one actually that the listener can actually jump into because there's only 9 issues so far.
Yeah, and they're both – I think they're both completely in trade.
Yeah, that's great.
Holy shit. Jason Aaron writes this?
Yeah, Jason Aaron from Thor, the rebooted Thor, who's amazing. Jason Aaron is a great writer, and his Thor work was amazing. The God Killer storyline was so good.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy that one because I've heard a lot of good things about Southern Bastards. From Image Comics?
Yeah, it's from Image Comics. It's really – it's good. It's very – I definitely picked that one up. It's nice and bloody violence and some good action and really good characterizations too. It's one of those books where every character you meet, you know, you're going to learn their backstory and everything about them. And
nice.
Definitely good. But this is a fun one. I think you guys may enjoy it. Airboy. Have you guys heard about this one?
No,
it's
I'm looking at this. I saw when you showed it to us before the show, but I'm looking at it now again.
It's only 3 issues out now. It's by James Robinson, who wrote what was his big one?
It's a Starman Fantastic Four.
Starman, yeah, that was his big thing. And the artist is Greg Hinkle, and it's this semi like faux autobiographical thing where they have to reboot this character Airboy. They're assigned, like James is given this job to reboot this character, and I think Airboy is a legitimate character from the 40s or something.
Yeah, I think so. I see old photos of him here.
I like this idea of this comic book. I like this idea of Airboy because it's like a behind the scenes type thing.
Yeah.
Wow, the character is from 1942, actually.
Wow, yeah. And it's in public domain. So that's like why they're.
Oh, that's why they could do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically James Robinson has writer's block and he's also this crazy degenerate. And so. He can't figure out what to write, so he gets the artist who's been assigned to the book to come to San Francisco to hang out for a couple of days, and they're going to like brainstorm ideas.
Oh wait, they're in the book. So the characters are Robinson and Hinkle in the book.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a behind the scenes thing. It's about like them writing Airboy.
Yeah,
and it takes place like now.
Yeah, it's current day.
Okay,
and then basically they just can't think of anything to write, and James just gets this guy drunk and high, and like they just go around San Francisco. And it's just this starts out like a nice bars and ends up in the seedy, seedy areas. And at the second issue, they actually got in a little trouble because he did some bit where they go to a tranny bar and like are both getting blown in the back in the bathroom by these trannies. And
nice.
It's not a book, a family book at all.
It's like Fear and Loathing in San Diego.
With the name Airboy, like it seems so innocent. Like you would not.
Yeah, it seems
like,
yeah, it seems very innocent.
That's awesome. All right, Scotty, give me one more good one, and then we're going to get to some news we can discuss.
All right, I'm going to go with...
There's so many good things out there.
I'm going to stick with the sex world. Sex Criminals, have you guys heard of this one?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Fraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another great writer.
He writes for Hawkeye, right?
Yes. Yeah, he did that
Which
Hawkeye
Which is amazing.
Absolutely. I like Matt Integer's.
I like Matt Square. Oh boy!
Oh shit!
That was. I don't have a. I don't have anything to play. What is Sex Criminals about? Tell us the conceit because it's fucking cool.
It's about this couple who when they have sex they stop time. More accurately, when they have orgasms they stop time. And
whoa,
so
that's awesome.
So you got to have a strong erectile dysfunction. You're fucking done, huh?
Yeah. Well, your powers are useless. And they actually get to that. They touch on it at some point in the book. they decide that they're going to use their powers to rob a bank to help fund this library that's about to get closed. It's funny. It's definitely one of the funniest things I've read in a long time. It sounds way dirtier than it is. I mean, it's dirty, but it's not like pornographic. It's a terrible title to tell anyone you read this book.
Yeah. I read Sex Criminals.
No. Underage Sex Criminals is different.
I've seen that at the comic store and I was like, should I buy that? That's something I would read, probably. Yeah.
No, it sounds great.
That's right up your alley, Rugboy.
Rugboy.
Yeah.
Hey, Rugboy, I left a bunch in the trash can out back. So just go, you know.
I feel like if I bought that book, though, like Brian Williams would be waiting for you when I got home.
It totally feels like a triumph.
Not Brian Williams, who's the guy who does the To Catch a Predator.
Oh, right.
What? That fucking.
Damn it. I said Brian Williams.
Brian Williams is good enough. Like,
I always confuse those two guys.
You know what? They might as well hire Brian Williams. I believe he needs the work right now.
Yeah. That joke would have been great if I would have known the right guy to say. God damn it.
Well, listener, I'll put links to all these books if you want to check them out. They're all great stuff.
They're great recommendations.
Great art, great stories. We got some geek news, but first, this.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Jock and Nerd! Okay, peoples. We got some. What do you guys want to talk about? We got a couple of interesting news bits. Well,
Scott, you've listened to the show, right? So you've heard us do the news bits. You cool with giving us your opinion on some of this shit?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. Believe me. Scotty, have you seen the fucking Fantastic Four?
No. I listened to your show, your review about it, and I got to say, you guys are great. You do you organize your show very well. I don't feel like I have to waste my money
to see it. No, you don't. The show is way more enjoyable than the goddamn movie is. Trust us.
Yeah.
This isn't even me plugging the show. Literally, the fucking show is time better spent. So the fallout continues, but there's this awesome article on Birth, Movies, Deaths by our favorite person. Who is it, Rugboy?
Devin Faraci.
That's right. Basically, we find out what the movie was like before they fucking mucked it up.
All right, let me just.
Did you guys read this? It's actually.
Yes, I read it, and it doesn't sound any better than what we watched.
No?
At all. It still sounds like it's a piece of shit.
Yeah, but at least stuff happens.
Yeah, but shitty stuff happens.
It's better than. It's better than fucking nothing happening, which is what the movie was.
It's very ambitious.
Would you have walked out of that movie and liked it more than this piece of shit that we watched?
I think you would have walked out saying this was a little overstuffed.
Yeah. It's very dense. It has Galactus.
It would have been a different kind of piece of shit. We got a small piece of shit.
I would have felt like my money was better spent and I got a big lump of shit as opposed to like a runny diarrhea shit for my fucking $12 or whatever.
Go
ahead, Scott.
I think it sounds like it would have been X-Men 3.
Yeah. I mean,
and the money issue is a real thing. I mean, that movie sounds like it costs a fuck ton.
Oh yeah, no, it would have been
spend Avengers level money on a franchise like Fantastic Four.
You know, if what they gave us was $120 million, this movie, there's no way.
That was a $200 million.
Yeah, but it has Galactus. It has Mole Man. They do the classic. They recreate the scene from Fantastic Four 1 in it, which at least that was something. Like, oh, you're trying to be interesting, and it was a different, completely different tone. It was like a fun action adventure movie. I don't.
It was more like a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
But it still would suck. It would still be the worst Marvel movie.
So even though it says Jeremy Slater gets the writing credit, but like the movie is nothing like what he turned in, apparently.
Dude, there's no reason to even talk about this movie anymore because it just sucks. It's just be forgotten about.
We have literally spent three straight shows talking about this movie.
I'm fascinated by how fucking horrible and what a disaster this fucking thing was.
Look,
I agree. I think train wrecks are far more interesting than middle of the road kind of like the most forgettable Marvel movie. It will still make its money, but
it's interesting to see where the seams fell apart, where they came apart. You know, it's interesting to see like why a terrible movie gets put out like this.
Yeah,
I would watch a documentary called The Making of the Fantastic Four. Like that would be awesome.
Remember that old Nicolas Cage Superman movie that never got made? Yeah. They have a documentary about that, and that shit is fascinating.
Funny you mentioned that. Have you seen that? I just watched that this week. It's called The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened? It's so interesting, dude. It's really good. It's really
that movie would have been the worst movie ever made, period.
You know what? When they get to the end of it, I kind of want to see that movie. There was so much production work done for this film. There's literally warehouses full of art and maquettes, and they started building the set, and there's tons of awesome sketches and concept art.
Did you see that wig, though?
Oh, his wig?
On Johnny Cage. On Nick Cage. Nicolas Cage.
On Sub-Zero.
I mean, just think of like a Tim Burton, Nick Cage suit. I don't know. It was fucking crazy. Like, one fun fact, you guys seen Wild Wild West, right? Mm. You know how Kevin Kline's evil character is like that big spider head? He's a head on a mechanical spider? That came off of the production as The Death of Superman Lives.
Yeah, because the dude was a fucking hairdresser, the
John
producer.
John Peters was a fucking psycho. Now, he produced Batman with Tim Burton. He's done a lot of good stuff. But yeah, he was a hairdresser that worked for Barbra Streisand and ended up being a Hollywood producer. Like, how does that happen?
I don't know.
What the fuck? But he goes, three things I want in this movie. He can't wear a costume. He can't fly. And he needs to fight a giant spider. That was his three. And Kevin Smith was the first writer. Kevin's like, okay. So basically, their version of Brainiac was going to be Brainiac in his head and with a big eight spider body.
They aborted that movie, and they should have.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a good call.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was the same thing.
They never made this movie either.
I mean, it's the same thing that happened in Fantastic Four. There was too many cooks, too many things, and it just kind of – but
– Yeah, but there wasn't a hairdresser running the show.
Wasn't a hairdresser. Hairdresser.
And that's why Sue Storm's wig changes every scene.
Yeah, you think John Peters would never would have let that fucking shit happen.
No. John Peters would have had that shit on lockdown. But the thing would be like would be green, and he would be instead of being made out of rocks, he'd be made out of glass or something.
But John Peters gets his fucking spider creature in fucking Wild Wild West, so it's weird. It's just weird.
Let's move on to the
moving on. We were Disney D23 Expo just happened. We were recording our last show, like it was happening, and I wanted to be the first to break the news, but we were a little early, and right after that show, we got a trailer description. For Civil Captain America Civil War, and it sounds fucking awesome.
Did you guys read it?
Yeah.
This one, I'm linking to our friend David Malofsky's site, A Place to Hang Your Cape, which you can find at ap2hyc.com. There's descriptions on every website. I'm just linking.
Scott, what did you think of it? This one. What's your thoughts on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and what did you think of this trailer?
I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Winter Soldier is my favorite. Avengers is my favorite. Winter Soldier is very close behind number two. I'm really excited for this. It's the same guy, directors and writers, I think.
The Russo brothers, man. They know what they're doing.
I think it'd be great. I know they got like, I hope it's very contained. Like, that's my concern is that there's gonna be so many people in it.
There's 11 heroes in this.
But I feel like – I think when you guys said this on the last show that it's going to be – it's more going to be like a battle at the end where you see everybody and not like as you go along.
Yeah.
And I hope that'll be the case because that – but yeah, I also – honestly, I skimmed through the article, but I didn't want to read too much because I'm
– You don't want to spoil it.
That's the movie I want to see cold. Okay. I almost don't even see trailers. Like I just want to go cold.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to experience it, but man.
We can't talk about it then.
No, talk about it.
Spider-Man. I just want to see Spider-Man.
He wasn't in that trailer.
No, he was not in the description.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they're saving that for a huge reveal.
I think I hope they save it like they saved the Vision. They did a good job the Vision. I had no idea, and he came out of nowhere, and it was awesome. And in this day and age, for this thing not to leak already? Like, this is amazing security on their end. I don't know how they're doing this.
Yeah, how did they do that?
How the fuck? Everything leaks.
I read that the security was like, and they were up and down the aisles throughout the whole thing. Like, if you even pulled out your phone, they were kicking you out.
Wow. Because you would think there'd be something. There's nothing. There's not a screen grab or nothing.
Well, I think it's smaller, too. Like, Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, that's like 6,000 people.
Yeah.
That's
hard. How are you going to monitor 6,000 people?
Yeah, it's harder to police that. But... they got Black Panther in this, General Ross, who
I would love to see. I'm excited he's back.
Yeah.
It's glad that they're finally acknowledging that Incredible Hulk movie.
Yeah.
Bringing back General Ross, because even though it's like the redheaded stepchild, it's still in the MCU.
I mean, it's been like 7 years. Will he turn into the Red Hulk?
He could. I hope not, though.
No?
Yeah.
And plus, where does Mark Ruffalo fit into all this if he was on the set at some point? He's not in this description also.
Okay, I don't know.
I have a question here. I don't remember at the end of Age of Ultron, which I got to say was not my favorite. But what happened to the Hulk? Because there was something in the article about like Hulk being in space.
Remember he took off in the Quinjet?
Yep.
And like just
can't go to space.
No, he just took off, set it on autopilot, and set it over the ocean. And gotcha. And he was all, remember, he was all sad and like, oh,
he's all scrunched up in the cockpit.
He's like, it's too small in here. Hulk's sad. Hulk leave
I think now. Maybe he went to like Antarctica or somewhere like no one can get to him.
I mean, the theories and ideas people have been throwing out is like maybe he does get into space, or maybe to meet the Guardians or whatever. I don't think he's in space. I don't know how, if he's going to be in this.
I'm sure
I wouldn't put him in unless you have the Red Hulk. Then you have to have somebody that could take on the regular Hulk.
Ooh, so true.
You can't have the Hulk, because that's like automatically we win. Whoever side the Hulk's on wins.
Well, but Thor's not mentioned either.
No.
I don't think Thor's going to be in it.
No, he's busy up in Asgard figuring all that shit out. And Anthony,
he's Ragnarokking.
Anthony, we were wrong about the teams. There's been a little flip-flop on the teams, hasn't there?
Yeah, a little bit, but I mean, it's not really a big deal. I don't think it's something.
Yeah,
we had Hawkeye and Widow on one side, and they were flipped.
Yeah,
so
they're basically on the other side. But I don't know. I'm excited for this movie. I agree. Like,
yeah, it's gonna be awesome. Yeah. I think.
I mean,
according to Devin Faraci too, it's keeping that grounded tone. It's up a little more wire work, but it seems like he saw it, and he seems like it's still in the same tone as Winter Soldier, and it should be good.
All right, so moving on to some DC news. this is just a weird thing. Michael Shannon was talking to people on set, and he had wax flippers on his hands.
So he's the Penguin.
He's playing the Penguin.
Oh shit!
Ah, mystery solved, Rug Boy. Thanks. I think we broke a whole huge scoop. The main villain in Batman versus Superman will be the Penguin. Okay, I'm good with that.
Everybody likes the Penguin. Watch Gotham.
But you know, you see the shot of him in the body bag. Apparently he's in it a lot, and all this leads me to think that he's going to be messed with and he's going to be Doomsday, and the wax flippers are like CGI markers for like giant bone
arms was my
or
theory.
Whatever.
It was my theory that he they're experimenting with his body and he becomes a monster.
I think that's a very good theory, and I think that's why this movie is going to be awful, except for Ben Affleck as Batman, which I really am excited about. I think this movie is going to be a colossal, just everything in the kitchen thrown at the wall. It's going to be a mess.
Oh, shit.
I'm so glad that you have as little faith in this movie as I do, because we've been saying the same thing and people are like, oh, fuck, it's awesome. Now, yes, it's awesome to see Batman and Superman on screen for the first time ever. And yes, I agree. Ben Affleck is going to be Batflick for like the rest of our, for like 12
movies.
You
have to always question, though. You have to question if they even plan to have this.
No, they didn't.
No, right? I think they were just like, okay, what do we do for Superman 2? Well, everyone likes Batman.
Let's put him in
Batman.
You know what would have been awesome? Fucking one mention of Batman in Man of Steel. Then all of this would have made sense. This motherfucker's been around for 20 years and all this shit, and nobody talked about it in the first movie.
Well, they had that one. They have the whatever Wayne logo on the one building
satellite.
That's trashed.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then that's what's in the trailer in this one when Ben Affleck is running into the cloud, which that's from that building.
Yeah. That's the same building, and that's kind of cool. But like, if this Bat Vigilante has been running around, you think somebody would have mentioned some shit in that first movie instead of just kind of shoehorning it in now?
All these franchises are getting so wrong. Like they're not. Marvel did it right at the beginning, and they can't figure out what Marvel did, which was like, you can't like do a small movie at the beginning and then immediately do Justice League. You have to like wait 7 years and then do Justice League.
Yeah, they're doing it. They're trying to do it backwards and hope it works.
Oh, you got something?
Who, me?
Rugboy, you got something? Did you have something to say?
I did, but then I stopped thinking. And it went away.
What happened? I just blacked out for a second.
Yeah, if I don't say it right away, then my brain just empties itself out. no, I was thinking – no, Imran said what I was thinking. Basically, they're doing it backwards, and I don't know. Do you think that this movie's going to be good, Scott? Like, do you think that this could be good in any way? Do you have any hope at all? Or do you think it's going to be a colossal failure?
I think there will be some really cool scenes with Batman and Superman.
It's going to look great.
That'll be fun. Yeah. And I think Henry Cavill is good. I think because there was the one scene in the first movie when he's being interrogated by Amy Adams. He was charming and he was fun to talk, like listen to talk. If they could figure out how to make him do more of that in this and like make him an enjoyable character, yeah, it would be good, but they're not going to.
That, you're right. That scene, you did see the charm and you could see him becoming Superman, but then the rest of the movie, you have him saving people and looking angry. That's not really Superman's character.
No,
that was like the only lighthearted moment in that whole movie. Everyone is so serious.
And in the new movie, he's going to be like persona non grata. He's going to be like, people don't like him because he's an alien and, you know, false god and all that stuff that they're so he's like not going to be jovial either in that movie.
The other thing is they've screened this fucking movie, dude. It's out there and I'm hoping it fucking gets leaked because I don't want to have to pay to see it.
But what do you think of Wonder Woman, though? Do you think that that's going to be a good Wonder Woman? I never really liked the casting for Wonder Woman. I think the girl's hot. Don't get me wrong.
She looks great. She looked great in the trailer. She looks great as Wonder Woman.
Do you think she's going to pull it off? She's got an accent. She probably not the greatest actress.
I think I liked Joss Whedon wanted to use Kobe Smulders years ago.
Oh, really?
And that would have been great.
Maria Hill is Wonder Woman. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it'll be fine. I don't
have a lot of hope, do you, for this movie? I think you're aboard our train. I like this. I think I like this. You fit in well with the DC.
They're gonna blow it.
It's like I'll see them. I'm gonna see them all because I usually what I do is I go drive by the street Rug Boy lives on.
Yeah,
and I like make him get in the trunk, and then I sneak him into the theater.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
And always he's great. Yeah. Cause then, yeah.
How do you cover up the stench though? Like that's the,
well, that's the thing. You get a whole row to yourself. And especially like if you go opening night, you just get the whole row. It's fantastic.
Lots of car deodorant just hanging all over yourself.
See what people will do to see movies with me. It's great.
You know what?
This dude hangs out with celebrities, but he goes to the movies with me.
You know what? I would bring Rugboy to the theater cause you would clear the place out. And now you got the whole place to yourself. You could just do whatever you want. It's so useful. All right. This came up today. Somebody hacked, apparently on Netflix, you could find the URL of a show and then you can alter the ID number by one to see the title and the listing for every show, meaning that Jessica Jones is already somewhere living on their Netflix servers.
Oh.
And they just have to push the button is what I saw. So some guy on Reddit said he did this. It seems legit because these titles are very interesting. Basically, we have 12 titles of – or 13 titles of the show. And notable stuff. There's a lot of like – there's some sexual stuff. The one I gotta say, episode 12, Jewel and the Power Man. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that's gonna be great.
Did you read Alias?
I did. I remember reading the when it came out. I was reading it for like a year. It was really good.
Did you read it, Scott?
I can't remember. I think I read some of it.
It was good.
Brian Michael Bendis, right? I'll put a link to that.
People can check I would say, listen, why don't you check it out before the show comes on? That way you can kind of compare them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the show started.
Unless you want to be virginal with the show.
No, it didn't matter. Because Daredevil, like, I read plenty of those. And
you're a huge Daredevil
unique thing. Yeah. And I think I have such high hopes for the show because that's
– Well, Daredevil set the bar so high.
Yeah. And I think they've got – I think this is smart that they followed up with a female character. And I got to say, like, to their appeal, my wife and I watched all of Daredevil, and I didn't think she'd be into it, and she loved it. And she was really into it and I think is on board for Jessica Jones. So.
Sweet.
Yeah, in fact, I know friends who have watched Daredevil, and then they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to try to give Arrow and Flash a chance. And I was like, you should have not watched Daredevil.
Start backwards.
Yeah. Because literally, after I binge-watched Daredevil, the next fucking thing I had to watch for the show was goddamn Gotham. And it was just worse than usual. I was like, oh, my God. Like, usually I can, you know, it doesn't – but after watching – all 13 episodes of Daredevil, try watching Gotham. It's not easy.
Try watching that or watching like Arrow's fight scenes and you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Not on the same level.
I can't wait to see what tone, that, like how they do like kind of a different tone for this, but this is very exciting. Netflix has said every 6 months they're going to put out Marvel content. God damn, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of Daredevil, did you see that they put the a new suit out?
Yeah, let's go to that.
Because, dude, it looks like dog shit.
Yeah, I did. I thought you might feel that way. We were very critical of the suit that appears in the final episode of
Why can't
Marvel's
they do this? Why? Okay, look, I've demystified this, all right? The reason why the black suit works is the way his face is covered. It's not like the body armor.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't help that he has like all of these different colors going on. I think if it was one color, dark red, it would work instead of all these different like sections.
And but it doesn't need to be body armor. It doesn't need to be like this SWAT team look.
No, it does. It just needs to be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more defined than a sweatshirt or whatever he's
more
wearing.
More streamlined. Basically, they added more black fucking pieces to everything. Like the front of it is all black. It's still
it doesn't
horns.
Have to look like a patchwork. It's like it's clean. It's a clean.
Check out that image, Earl. I just posted in the chat. This is someone, a fan created this, and I think this would be way better.
Oh, I see that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You've seen that before?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Why not use that?
It's like cloth, and I mean, I want at least cloth. Put the DD on the goddamn chest. What are you doing?
But to Rugboy's point, he doesn't need to be like armored up like that.
No.
You make him sleek like this.
I mean,
where it has to be like a very sleek red, you know, like a darker red outline.
And they've already established that what's his name? Melvin Potter can make a thin layer of armor that will go underneath that, and it still wouldn't be bulky.
That was the weird thing at the end of that series, because I feel like they didn't know how good the black suit would look.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
Sort of got locked into it.
Yeah,
and then because you saw his fighting. His fighting's awesome throughout it, and then the last fight scene, you can tell he can't move.
The fucking suit's in the way. What are you doing?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think when they posted that new suit, there was a rumor that they'd modified it, but I don't think that. But then they just denied. Like the last I saw this evening was the costume designer denied they changed anything.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's gotta be less. It's just gotta be less.
Rumor I saw too was that the costume designer, that's an old suit that they were playing around with for the first season.
Oh,
the new suit.
So this may
so
not
who knows.
Be
so
it.
This might be just a leaked image that we, and it's not really anything, but regardless, to Scott's point, the black costume looked like shit at first and in like pictures and stuff. But then when you saw it in motion and you saw it actually in the show, then you were like, wow, that's legit. And then you grew to love that suit, and then the last suit was shit, and you're just like, fuck, like you can't end it with a suit that is worse than what you had on the entire
season.
It's
like laughable. Although in this Screen Rant article they do mention that you know, he wore this like Shadowland dark armor suit in the 90s, and there's a image in there, link in the show notes, people. This suit looks pretty awesome minus the little patches of silver armor thingy, whatever that is.
I think if they just make it one color,
yeah,
that would help it immensely.
Yeah.
And if the helmet needs to be reworked.
I mean,
I think the fact that you can't have it look like Batman, like they're doing this Batman thing with him with like the cowl with the scowl.
Yeah.
You know, with the eyes. I think that the great thing about that bandana is that it just completely covers his eyes.
Yeah. You don't need to define his eyes.
No, I think even in the Trial of the Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno.
That
and
was
Rex
the same. Yes, that was the same. And that shitty movie was the same goddamn costume.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked fine. You know, it doesn't need to be that crazy.
The mask also needs to cover more of his cheeks. Like if you see the picture I linked, it cuts downward. Whereas the image they used in the series, it's like a horizontal line.
Oh,
where it cuts
goes
off.
Up and
it goes up. So you can see more of his cheek. It needs to cut down so that his face is more covered.
Yeah.
I hope that's not. I hope that they.
It has to be like this.
I don't understand this. Like, okay, we're three stupid guys sitting around.
I know.
Four. And we know this. We know what to do. Like, why
it's
don't they know what to do?
I mean, Ben Affleck's suit just was awesome. Use that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I want the DD on the chest, though.
I want it all on the chest.
I want the duty on the chest.
Oh, on the face and chest.
On
them
all over. I tweeted all over myself, people. all right. The last thing is Scott sent this link, which is very interesting, and it was regarding something we had talked about earlier in the show listener was Marvel is putting out these hip hop variant covers in October, I believe. And I loved it because I love, you know, I've talked about Hip Hop Family Tree. They are they're homages to some of my favorite albums, albums that remind me of actually Pratt and 90s, like the Spider-Man Midnight Marauders, Tribe Called Quest one is great. However, Marvel's getting a little bit of flack in this article from Comics Alliance. Scotty, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, basically the it's like an editorial, and the point being that Marvel is putting out all these hip hop covers, but they don't have any black writers or I think black artists. I'm not 100% certain on the artist part, but they definitely don't have any black writers right now on any of their titles. And this guy's point, which I think was pretty valid, he's like, you like our culture, but you're not letting us in the door to create.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a thing that's happened in general in media, but
I mean, it's interesting, just, you know.
And it's interesting too to have white people talking about black people issues or even minority issues. Like that perspective, and a couple of you guys are white, but that perspective is, I mean, it's going to be flawed. There's no way you can live that life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the point is like you don't need a black writer to write black characters. You don't. A good writer is a good writer. You just need to, you know, employ black writers.
Yeah. I think that's his point was, I mean, his sort of touchstone is that they're relaunching Blade without. And, but I think it is a good, there is a good point. Like you can't, it doesn't have, like you, men can write women can write men. Right. You don't have to write specific to what you just know. But I think there's a point to be made that there's just the same group of people are writing all titles out there. And there is not enough diversity back behind the scenes. And I think throughout TV, movies, comics, everywhere.
Rugboy comment?
Yeah, I remember there was a time where there was a lot of black artists and black writers and stuff when the Milestone stuff came out.
Yeah, Milestone comics.
And, you know, Brian Stelfreeze is black and he was like the band doing Batman covers, you know? Yeah. And like, you know, there was a lot of guys that I looked up to, you know, that were good artists and all that stuff. So, and you got Jamal Igle, you know, there's a lot of guys out there, Yvel Goucher, they were all in the fabric of that time. But like, I don't think there's as many people out there right now putting out books. Like I think independently even that are, you know, there's a lot more minorities and a lot more diversity in the independent comics. Yeah. But in like the DC and Marvel, I don't know, you know, flagship guys, not as many as there used to be. There used to be more. I don't know why it dipped back down. Because there's all these talented guys out there. What are they doing? They're just
Where are they? That's the thing.
I don't think it's a question that like any kind of institutional thing where act like Alexo Alonso or any of those editors are actively going no, we're not. I think it's just you sort of. I mean, we see it in television. I see it at the show a lot. We went through this a couple of years ago when we didn't hire a black woman as a cast member.
Yeah.
And it was not, there was no intention to like, we're not going to do this. It just didn't happen. And it wasn't until it got called out. They're like, oh, we kind of probably need to diversify a lot. Like just because you just end up having the same voice.
There's the pussy.
Yeah, the pussy's back. Just talking about SNL a little bit, that when Leslie Jones first came on the show, she was hired as a writer.
Yeah.
And when she was in the writer's room, she's not afraid to say what she thinks. And there would be times that the jokes would be thrown around and people would be like riffing on a new bit. And it's something that sort of in one mindset was funny. And she would just go, I don't get that. That's not funny. And we were, like it's hard because it created a little tension at first because they're like, well, you just don't get it. But she's part of the audience and she's just kind of come in from outside and she has the freshest sort of, she's not indoctrinated to the mindset yet.
Yeah.
And it was refreshing to hear that and go, oh yeah, no, this is something that people just don't know. Like one of the examples was that podcast Serial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just not something that is out there that much. And it is just something that like Harvard educated writers really got into.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're obsessed about, and the rest of the world like kind of didn't get.
Yeah, like regular people don't know about that shit.
But you, what? At what point did it turn to where you guys are like, oh, we have to parody this? Everybody knows about this now.
We finally took one guy who figured, who had a take on it that was universal.
Yeah, and dude, that parody is brilliant. Yeah, holy crap! You guys
listen to Serial?
We Imran turned me on.
Yeah,
to it.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I like it.
I didn't listen to it.
It's NPR. It's good. It fucked up.
I've given my opinion. I'll just give it again. Say this again. It's weird to listen to Serial because you're listening to it as if it's a story, which it is, but it's not a fake story. It's a real story with real consequences, with real people that were affected and were being entertained by someone's death.
And
at the end of the day,
still
it's about someone's death in real lives.
Yeah. And they're still like alive. Like these are real people living
these are real
right
people,
now.
Yeah.
Well, most of them are alive. One's not, but
which is why there's the show.
But that Anthony, that's a very good point. It was voyeuristic, and it was a weird. It was hard. At some point, you're like, why are we still let these people alone?
Yeah, like, right. Like Anthony, you said that over and over again. You felt dirty, like intruding. These people didn't ask for all this fucking attention. But your guy's take on SNL was so goddamn brilliant. I fucking loved it. And
they did.
Leslie Jones is great, dude. She obviously she'll say whatever the fuck she wants, and you can't wait to see her show up and open her mouth.
Yeah.
Well, just one quick point going back to the Comic Alliance thing, that article that Scott brought up is at the end of the day, you want to hire the most talented people, white, black, Asian, Biscuit, or whatever. But you do need articles like this to point out that there's sometimes our flaws in the system or that people need to be more aware of the fact that there are other writers, other creators out there that may not just be in the same line of friends that your same circle of friends or something like that.
See, that's the thing. I mean, like, all right, you're watching Saturday Night Live, all right? It's a show. You could see if someone's black or not. But a comic book, you can't tell if someone's black,
right?
You know, if they're writing it or drawing it. It's completely invisible. So there's no reason to segregate or to be, against having a black writer. So I don't think that there's a reason to not have them. So I just think it's just the way the chips are falling right now. And I don't think that's right, but I don't think it's, or maybe Disney is evil.
I don't think there's an intention to keep anyone out. I think it is. It's just, it's like Rugboy saying, it's just sort of how it's shaken out now.
Yeah.
But Anthony's got a good point. Like just you need to shine the light on it. I think what angered this guy in this article was the response that Marvel had was sort of like, we're fine. We don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
And that was a bad response on their part. They should have, you sometimes have to go, okay, you're right. Like we have to look at this.
Yeah.
And we have
The response could have been a little more tactful. Let's say now I do feel like in their characters, they're trying to bring diversity and they have a lot of great women writers. I mean, we have a Pakistani Muslim superhero in Ms. Marvel. Thor is a woman. You got Gail Simone. You got G. Willow Wilson, who she's not Pakistani. She's a Muslim convert. But let me tell you, being Pakistani, she nails the Pakistani homes, all the Urdu words she puts in there, they're all 100% accurate. She did.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know. She must be hanging out with a family because she got the shit right. And when I read it, I was like, oh, shit, dude. She did her homework. Like, it's really good.
Well, what also helps, too, is if you get diverse writers, they're going to create characters that end up looking like themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to end up creating a character that I'm not as an Asian white guy going to create a black character that doesn't look like I wouldn't be able to relate to that. So when you bring in diverse writers,
then you got Miles Morales, who if you listen to you guys listen to Fat Man and Batman, are you aware of Mark Bernardin? He's a writer. He writes on Playboy now.
Nah.
So he pretty much said that he had mentioned like, why can't Spider-Man be black? Like way back and on a blog post, and it went viral. And then a little bit later, Miles Morales was introduced.
Yeah,
and Miles is a great character.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. That's great to see. I think it's great there to see. To see that on the front of it, it's good.
It's an interesting article for sure.
Yeah.
You
guys check it out. Link in the show notes. Finally, you guys, before we wrap up, Next month, we're going to have some fun stuff for Spider-Man fans. Rugboy, you're going to love this. Our buddy David Malofsky, who's editor over at A Place to Hang Your Cape, ap2hyc.com. All next month, he has donned it Spider-Timber. He wants to do a Spider-Man theme month. He's got a lot of writers on board, a lot of podcasts on board, us being one of them, the Geek Course being another one. There'll also be contributors from I'mWithGeek.com, GeekGuardian.com, and BlackGirlNerds.com. Whoa. And he's going to repurpose our Spider-Man shows we've done already. We did a History of Spider-Man on a small screen. We did Essential Spider-Man reading list. But now we're going to have to do some more, and I may need some ideas. Rugboy, I know you've been dying to get on a Spider-Man show.
I want to do a Spider-Man one.
What would your show be?
And Scott knows a lot about Spider-Man, yeah, too.
Anthony, what were our ideas? We had we might do a Venom show.
Yeah, maybe a Venom show or something on villains.
How about we just talk about Spider-Man, okay, like the different Spider-Men that there are.
Yeah, that was one of my ideas, like non-Peter Parker Spider-Men.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Or we could do one show on the movies. Anyways, listener, if you have ideas or if you have something about Spider-Man you want us to cover, send us an email, show@jockandnerd.com, or find us on Twitter @jockandnerdcast or Facebook. Let us know, because we need ideas. We have some ideas. But hashtag Spider-Timber. Send us a tweet with that, with whatever you want us to talk about, and that's going to be going all month of September. That's fun, dude. Like, I need an excuse to talk about Spider-Man anyway. Scott, anything else you want to plug? Anything you want to promote? Where can people find you if they want to find you?
They can find me at scottrweinstein.com.
All right.
Which just sends you to my Facebook page. Yeah, so, I don't know. Something. And then I'm on Twitter at Weinstein Scott is my handle.
How did you get so many followers? I only got like 150 or something. You got like a million.
Because I started doing it years ago, and then I some of the guys that like would follow Friday thing at work would do it.
Yeah.
So, like, all the writers at work have like thousands and thousands of followers. Yeah. So like they do a follow Friday.
The writers. How many of them try out their jokes on their Twitter feed before?
A lot now.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We kind of run into that problem every now and then because someone will write something, like tweet something out, and then 2 days later they're like, oh, that'd be a good joke if I tweet, you know, if I
hadn't put it out. Yeah. And like, but it's out there now.
And we sort of turn a blind eye to it because it's so like, we get so much shit online. People are like, I wrote that. I tweeted that years ago. I'm like, you have six followers. Nobody knows you.
Right. You don't get credit when you have six followers.
They steal all my jokes, those guys.
It's like when a tree falls in the forest and no one's around.
They're yelling into the void. There's a lot of Twitter. There's some really good just Twitter comics. Like, they're really good in 140 characters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah,
that's an art in itself. But thanks for joining us, man. We are welcome back anytime. Can't wait to have you back. It's been great, and it's been great catching up with you after 8 years. Like, I'm an ass.
Thanks for having me. It's Anthony. It was great meeting you, and Emron. Thanks for having me. And Rugboy, get off my foot. But
that's your foot.
That's not a sandwich, Rugboy.
It's so warm.
But you guys are do a great job. I'm super impressed, and thank you for having me. This has been
tell everyone fun. You know about me.
You can follow Rugboy @reallyrugboy. Listen, one tweet from Weinstein Scott @reallyrugboy. You're gonna blow up Rugboy. It's over.
Yeah, I know. It's my day's coming.
If any of you guys like the show, any of our listeners, if you like this stuff, please go on iTunes and subscribe. Give us a nice rating and a review. It really helps the show and gets our stuff out there too. Ever increasing audience.
Listen, subscribe in any. Everyone has their favorite podcast catcher. Subscribe in any of them. What? Why? Because it's free and you'll never miss a show. You don't got to worry about it. The show will come to you as quickly as we put it out. It's very convenient. You can also send us an audio comment if you have something to say. Send us a voicemail. You can go to speakpipe.com/jockandnerd or click the link in the show notes, or even just record a little voice memo, email it to show@jockandnerd. Find us on Twitter @jockandnerdcast, Facebook, Clamor, blah, 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 yada, yada, jockandnerd.com/review. Finally, listener, go up to the next person you see and give them one of these.
Jock and Nerd.
That's all. That's all I want you to do. Don't even explain it. Just leave them wanting more. All right, guys. Rugboy, Scott, thanks for being here. My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he is the nerd.
And we'll catch you next time.
So listen,
Hold on. Okay, wait. Okay. Everybody's listening to the Nerdist now. They're gone. We can talk freely. What do you got? Anybody got anything to get off their chest?
No, I was gonna say I got a story to tell you.
Oh shit. Okay, hit us.
So, like, remember, like, we were doing a podcast, and there was, like, dogs, and they stole – I had a bag, like, food bag.
Did you ever get your shit back?
Yeah. Well, I had, like, a hard salami in there.
Yeah.
Like an apple.
You got to keep the salami on your person. That's a high-quality treat.
Anyway, this building I live in, it's, like, a big house. It's, like, you know, and, like, different people live in different floors. There's, like, four floors. I live in the basement. All right? So – the dogs come in there. I leave the door open because there's no air conditioning. And the dogs come in here and they take my bag with the salami.
Oh, boy.
And so I chase the dogs, and the dogs belong to this house with one of these families. So I finally, like, chase the dogs wherever they come from. And I talk to this lady, and her husband's like, hey, you want a dog sit? So I got a job.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
Now I got. Yeah.
Cha-ching. Rugboy, I'm disappointed in you. You're employed? What the fuck? This was not agreed. You're not.
Yeah, you need to be homeless. What the fuck?
This is your job. We're your employers. You're moonlighting? Well, no. Are you moonlighting on me? What's going on?
Well, it's not like I'm on the books. It's like, you know,
there's books? What books?
You know, like the books when you get like a payroll.
Well, so they write it off?
No, they just give me money. Sometimes they give me food. They let me use their Wi-Fi. It's good for us because I can get on.
You could train those dogs like Chris Pratt did to the Raptors, and then they could be on your side.
Yeah.
Then you could lead a dog army.
But I feel like I can't really ever have a real job because, like, no one's gonna trust me, like, with, like, actual responsibility. The dogs, though, I can let them out. Shit, and then I close. You know, yeah, anybody could do that. Idiot could.
Dogs let you out? You shit?
I basically watch them shit, and then I let them come and watch me shit. And then we're all happy.
You know what? I think that's only fair. We watch dogs shit all the time. And then when they want to, like, poke their head in the bathroom, we're taking the shit, we're like, oh, no, Poochie. Wait, why not?
I get jealous.
Yeah, it's only fair. If I'm going to watch you shit, you get to watch me shit. Why not?
I get jealous of watching dog shit. Because they never have to wipe their ass.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I'm supposed to be the dominant species. Like, I'm the anointed species. I'm sentient being, and I got to fucking wipe my ass. This dog takes a huge dump, nothing. Just walks away like nothing ever happened.
Not only that, they can fucking piss and shit wherever they want. It's not fair, people.
They have it made.
It's
all right?
Not fair.
It's like, if I die, I'm going to come back as a dog.